Yes?
Yep.
Okay, good. So tonight I want to give a little bit more of a talk than I might usually give in these things. Hold on one second. Okay, good. So, everybody's there? You're strapped into your chair, Gabrielle? So, Jenna, we can record this now. It's being recorded. Good. So, I wanted to follow up a little bit on some themes that we explored in the retreat in Cottonwood, particularly the theme of intimacy. And, in meditation practice, we do our very best, I think, to attend to our experience with some degree of sincerity and presence of mind. And sometimes, as you know, it comes effortlessly and easily. And it's a delight, actually, to be in touch with one's life in practice. At other times, it can be really difficult and even grueling to observe our life, to feel the pain in the body, the confusion in the mind, the heartache of our life. And we might really want to stop all of that at sometimes in the practice, even as we feel the momentum, if we will, of conditioned habit to just keep going. So I want to talk about intimacy and infinity. And it's part comes out of a conversation I had with a friend, Martin Alwood, who's a meditation teacher in France. And I realized that we were talking, and I realized that in meditation practice, we sometimes feel the deep connection between these two things, between intimacy and infinity, actually. And at the other times, we feel like we're in some kind of limbo between them, in a kind of purgatory. Generally, when we think of intimacy, we think of the connection between ourselves and something else. And we could think of it as kind of closing the gap between ourselves and something else or someone else. The gap that we seek to be intimate with, and with what we seek to be intimate with and how we experience ourselves. And usually when we talk about this, we think of it in terms of relationship.
Can you still hear it?
Oh, yeah. No, it's okay.
Okay, good. So some of us, when we think of intimacy, we make the association between a sexual or romantic intimacy with others. Others of us experience intimacy when we're in nature, when we walk in the woods or along the lake. Or some of us experience a sense of intimacy when we settle into something like reading a book or some kind of artistic expression. We might just feel it as a kind of drop into a quiet presence. This is another way that we can experience intimacy. And some of us, we find it very easy to abandon ourselves into intimacy. And still others of us feel the absolute suffering of moments of separation. So intimacy can be felt, one way we can feel this intimacy is a kind of dropping of the boundaries, a sense of undividedness. And it can feel very beautiful. And it can also feel quite frightening to us. For some of us, I think there's a tendency to be caught or lost in the longing for intimacy. We can draw a sort of self-protective bubble around ourselves. Some of us find it easier to be intimate with ourselves than we feel able to be with others. But even that, even when we're intimate with ourselves, we feel it as in the context of others, really. So I just want to say a few more things about this, that some of us are really drawn toward others or draw back from intimacy with others. A lot of times we're caught in the idea of intimacy, the projection of it. You know, we see two people walking hand in hand along the lake or through town or someplace, and we feel some kind of pull for it. We may feel that intimacy is all around us, and yet it's somehow so that we're apart from it. But I think what I want to talk about this evening is even a more fundamental kind of division that we feel in our lives. The way we tend to experience ourselves as divided from our experience. You know, this is so much of the trouble that we experience in meditation. We often meditate like there are two things going on. Like there's somebody who's meditating, and something that's happening. That's how we usually think about it. I'm watching what's happening. Yeah. And so we try to meditate to cross this gap. We try to meditate across this gap. And there's this gap between what we could say is who we're taking ourselves to be and that which we're trying to connect intimately with. The experience of us and the experience we're having. Yeah. This is the division that we feel, this fundamental division that we often feel in the meditation practice. But where is this division? Where is it? I mean, can you separate yourself from your experience? I mean, can you have any sense of the one you take yourself to be without having an experience? It's not just some esoteric question I'm trying to get at. But I want to point to is that we might be much closer to ourselves than we think. Maybe we're already intimate with our experience. Maybe the idea of taking our awareness somewhere strengthens the habit of seeing awareness and experience as separate. Maybe it just reinforces the illusion of difference. And maybe this is the tragic comedy of meditation practice. I'm trying to close the gap that doesn't really exist. This is the folly of meditation practice, trying to close the gap that doesn't really exist. I mean, the breath is already here, and awareness is already here. So much of the time, I think, the illusion of separation between awareness and experience is driving our meditation practice. And I don't think there's a way that we can talk ourselves out of it, out of this kind of comic tragedy. But I think instead, what we can do is evoke, if you will, or call forward an intention to inhabit the experience with awareness. I mean, suppose that was our practice. Suppose that was the intention that we sat down on the cushion with, to inhabit our experience with awareness. You know, the Buddha taught beautifully. He said, know the body in the body. Know the body in the body. Now, I've said that 1,000 times to you. I've heard it on just about every meditation retreat I've ever attended. And yet it remains one of the simplest and most beautiful and poignant instructions that I know. To know the body in the body. So I think what we can do in this meditation practice is, in a way, align ourselves with this mysterious thing we call awareness and this mysterious thing we call experience. Now, sometimes, and you all know this, in your meditation practice, we suddenly recognize this. It's like immediate. And we see both experience and awareness rising together. It just comes and we go, ah, there it is. There it is. Oh, how do I keep that? Oh, wait, it's separating. It's separating. Oh. You know, and that goes on, right? And at other times, at least for me, I don't know if it's for you, it comes, this recognition comes through a kind of exhaustion, through a time when I begin to feel exhausted by imposing my ideas on the meditation. I just get worn out by trying to make it look like something I think it should look like. And then it happens. Then I see the intimacy of myself in the experience, or awareness in the experience. And in those moments, if you can remember such moments, they often have a kind of purity about them, or an innocence about them, or some kind of harmony or spaciousness that we rest in for a moment, or there's this pristine stillness that sometimes emerges. And awareness simply knows experience as it's unfolding, as the same thing. They arise together. And there is, in this moment, a certain intimacy. Yeah? A dropping of the illusion that there's a gap. Well, then what? Then what? I mean, what happens in this intimacy? I think it depends on the angle or the perspective that we look at it from. And, you know, we could say, I mean, there's lots of ways to talk about this, but I'd like to point to these three predominant angles or perspectives through which we can experience the sense of intimacy. And we've talked many times about these three centers, the body, heart, and mind. Yeah. So the way that we might experience it in the body center is as an embodied perspective. Know the body in the body. And when this alignment is felt as a body experience, it sometimes is felt as a, or sensed as pure presence. A beingness, we could say. The sense of being here now, you know, that my friend talks about so much in his books, Be Here Now. I mean, where else could we be? That's the experience. I mean, be here now. I mean, where else could we be? I remember asking him that question once at breakfast. You know, somebody had showed me him a new bumper sticker that somebody made, Be Here Now. And I said, well, where else could you be? You know? So that's one way we know it, you know, in the body center, you could say. Another way we can know it is in the head center, and it appears as a kind of luminosity or brilliance, actually. And there's just this feeling of absolute clarity. Yeah. Well, we can feel it in the heart center. We can feel it as a kind of embrace, we could say, or tenderness, or love. Now, you know, one of the things that's so about this way of experiencing it that's confusing for us is that normally we associate love with I and other, you know, with I'm over there and you're over here and, you know, we get together. You know, one of the things that's, I don't know, so for me around this heart center is love, or at least in my experience, and you can tell me if it's different for you, but for me, love is a lot about the willingness to be in contact. Yeah. And like when we first fall in love, this is really a kind of intense liking, we could say. But love is more like, it takes us beyond this intense liking that we often confuse with love. For those of us who have been in longer-term relationships, we realize that the thing that we once liked so intensely often becomes the thing that really annoys us most intensely later on in our life. You know? So what I've learned about, you know, being in loving relationship is that love is about staying in contact, even when we're in contact with what's unpleasant. And this is why in meditation, or when I'm offering meditation instruction, I often encourage relaxation and allowing as supports, we could say, for staying in contact with your experience, for being open to your experience, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant. Because if I'm not, willing to stay with my experience, I'm separating my experience, separating from it, whether that's my legs hurting or my heart aching. So we learn to stay open to our experience, even if our experience is the resistance to what's occurring. Yeah. And we begin to understand that love, at least as I understand it, is a willingness to be close, to stay in contact with, you could say, to let what is here live, to allow it its habits, to allow it its life. Yeah. Now, the Buddha, of course, he spoke about these four types of love, or I call them four flavors of love, that we've spoken about many times. They are sometimes called the immeasurables. And that, you know, they are metta, karuna, mudita, and upekkha. And we cultivate these four, contact with these four qualities of love, because they expand our capacity to allow. It's not just that they make us good, nice people. They really expand our capacity to allow, to include everything, to stay with, right? In order to really become intimate. So metta, or loving kindness, it's usually translated, although I don't like that translation so much. I think of metta as just friendliness, as caring, actually. So it's a willingness to meet experience simply as it is. And this quality, when this quality of metta is present, we feel a certain kind of radiant, warm relationship with everything, you know, normal stuff, everyday things, people walking down the street, going to the grocery store, you know. That's one way we feel metta. And the second flavor of love is karuna, or usually translated as compassion. And it arises from a willingness to be with what's painful, what's stressful, the ways that cause us suffering. The pain of the world, you know, the political situation, the environmental devastation, the suffering of certain groups of beings, you know. It's the willingness to not turn away, to stay in the room when the going gets rough. And then mudita, you know, that is often translated as appreciative joy. I like to think of it just as delight. You know, delight in what is beautiful and lovely. That's a way to think about it, you know. It seems easy and simple to simply enjoy the good fortune of our friends. Yeah. Their loveliness. But at the same time, it's easy to get envious of them, to become jealous of them, to become envious of another's good fortune. And then upekkha, the fourth flavor of love, often translated as equanimity. This is a beautiful translation, but it also it can sound a little like even keel, you know, like a flat line almost, you know, and that's what kind of leads us into indifference even often. So I think this type of love, this particular flavor of love, arises out of contact with constant change. It arises out of the willingness to be in contact with the uncertainty of life. In a way, it's an openness to all that we are not in control of, without attachment to outcome. It's a vast, infinite, the openness of the heart. It's the vast, infinite openness of the heart. Yeah. Now, when we think about infinity, we usually think externally. We have this thing that happens for us in our minds. We think infinity is out there, you know, like in outer space. You know, vast outer space, you know, galaxies that go on forever and ever and ever. Yet inner space, consciousness, is equally infinite. I mean, you can go in and in and in and in and in and never find a middle. Never find an end. The heart is infinite. Awareness is infinite. Experience is infinite. So there's no limit to what we can be intimate with. There's an infinite amount of experience and an infinite awareness and an infinite amount of love. And knowing is similarly infinite. We can know the infinite unfolding of reality. The inexhaustible mystery of being. Yeah. So the willingness to be in contact. For me, this is an act of love. We might even say it is love. The willingness to be in contact. Intimacy of infinity. So I'm going to stop there. You know, I just wanted to sort of seed our discussion with these ideas so that we maybe rework the notion of intimacy and really connect it to the infinite, actually. So I want to know what you're experiencing, you know, in your body, in your heart, in your mind. I'm not so much interested in an intellectual discussion about this, you know. I want to have us know it in a more intimate way, yeah, rather than just an intellectual way. So I think I'll pause my comments now and see what kind of discussion we might have about this, or just see, how's it landing for you, what I just said, you know? Does it make any sense to you at all? Or how does it, how does it go in? Where does it go in? Does it go in through your heart? Does it go in through your belly? Does it go in through your mind? And as it does, what's the effect? Yeah. So I'll pause and we'll see what's on your hearts and minds. Okay. There's a chair there, I take it, Jenna, where someone can sit if they want to. Beautiful. And, you know, let's explore.
Hi, Frank.
Hi. Beautiful. Hey, just scoot back. Wait a minute. Hang on. Before you start talking, just scoot back a little bit so I can see more.